welcome back to another edition of News from the Front, the premier Flames of War podcast by gamers for gamers, featuring rules discussions, list constructions, product deconstructions, and of course, spousal repercussions. We are broadcasting today from the War Room, high atop the WWPD Tower, located in downtown Midlothian, Virginia. And now, the host of News from the Front and founder of the WWPD International Network, the man who brings hell in a Hellcat, Steve McLaughlin.
Woo! Oh, man. New intro. I love it.
That's right. Well, we're saying our new focus, right?
I love it. Man, I am joined today, as always, with Luke Black Juan Melia.
Hello, everyone.
And Dirty, Filthy, Crusty John.
What up?
All right, guys. Been a while since we've been in the studio. It's been almost a month now, I think. Last thing we did was we were live.
Mobile studio.
That's right.
Live and in person.
That's right. We were live. So, what have you guys been up to? Besides Cold Wars. We'll talk about Cold Wars in a second here, but I think we've spent enough time on that. So,
Arnhem.
Yes.
I've actually been doing it. I'm trying to stick with my New Year's resolution this year. Only be about, give or take a year, late.
Yeah, that's fine.
We have the minds of Melia, and we have the Baber work camp.
Yeah, it's like working on a bridge on the River Kwai, not Arnhem. It's like, I'm whistling the song and, going along. But, I've been working on that. I've only got, out of the 30, I think it's 33, and I might have added a few, 35 buildings, I think, now, as I want for Arnhem. I only have...
He just said 35 buildings, everybody.
Yeah, 35 buildings, or 6x4
table.
And he
painted them all.
Yeah, I painted them all.
Didn't buy them.
They're looking nice.
Well, a couple of them, a couple of the boys helped us with, but... But I've got, I think I've got 3 to build and paint, and I've got 1 to finish painting, and then that'll be it. And so,
nice.
Yeah, excuse me. I've actually started adding a bunch of the trees and hedges and gates and
all the little ground.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally not going for a terrain guy scale.
Right.
I've got pieces of paper crumpled up floating through the. Through the road like he does. But, I want something to look nice. So, we got a deadline now, right?
That's right. We're running
it at Historicon. I registered for it the other day. It should be, if I get my time right, Friday. Hmm. I think it'll be Friday around noon, right? Because we're playing the 95 tournament on Thursday. So, anyway, I've been crashing Arnhem completely. Anybody who's following our WWPD forum. Hold on, man. I'm getting my chip, man.
I think I'm claiming it.
That's not how it works.
Yeah,
you can't claim
absolutely.
A chip after
I'm chipping
fact.
It. On the forum, there's a post that Steve stickied up there. It talks about our painting cues, and I've been updating that fairly religiously.
Yep, me too.
You guys will see Arnhem, and then after that, Arnhem.
Nice.
So.
You got going to do some more Germans for Arnhem? I know you were a little short on...
I don't think I am.
If you need some, just talk to me.
No joke. Yeah,
since I have two full German companies now.
Yeah, your phantom German whatever.
Yeah, the little rollout ones.
The real Ghost Division.
Patton's
right?
ones, yeah. Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to be short Brits, because everybody on the planet has Germans. I actually ran three... I did a couple lists. I got about 3,000 points for the... Germans and about 2 grand for the British paratroopers, a little over that, and I pretty much have it. So we'll see. I mean, it's got to be something playable, right? We don't want to be there for 6 hours trying to figure out how to go house to house. So that's what I've been doing.
How are people going to be able to sign up for your game?
They're going to be able to sign up just like they do for any Historicon event, which I believe you can do it at the little table that they'll have for signing up for games. And I believe
you can pre-register.
You can pre-register as well.
You can pre-register for one event every day, right?
So, yeah, I think so. And so you'll see, this assumes I get the time I want. You should see a Friday noon listing for Arnhem, and it is sponsored by WWPD. And I forget what I called it. Probably it's called an Operation Market Garden or something.
Yeah.
But you can do that. So that's what I've been doing. Been testing the board.
Yep.
Steve and I played the game with my paratroopers, who wanted to get back in the swing of things with them. I did about a half-scale test with Ted, where he crushed me, which was good. You guys will see a post about that later. Ted's getting good, man.
I know he is.
I'm telling you. He's getting good. And... we have got to talk about German half tracks and how awesome they are. I know we've been going on and on and on and on and on about it, but holy hell, are they good?
Yeah, they're awesome.
All right.
What about you, Steve? What have you been up to, buddy?
Let's see. Well, I've been painting some. I just finished up some M18 Hellcats, and I got more on the way.
They look fantastic.
Thank you, sir. You better believe I'm going to run both Task Force A and the new Tank Destroyer Company coming out in Blood, Guts, and Glory. Let's see. I've been up to that. What else have I done, man? I've been photo documenting my armies again. I'm doing the video collections.
Yeah.
I've got three in the can now. The other one just went live this morning. So
people love them.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun to do, too, because I can kind of remember, oh, yeah, I need to add this. Or
you
whatever.
Can tell the baby's sleeping through the night a little bit more.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Steve's like, opportunity to order more miniatures.
That's right. Hey, let's give a special shout-out to Steve's wife right now. I worked late last night. I mean, yeah. I didn't get home till late. I didn't fall asleep probably till 5 o'clock in the morning. And yesterday we were sending some emails back and forth and said, where's my biscuits and gravy? And just jokingly, and the next thing I know...
Biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits Lydia, and gravy. God bless you.
This is another early morning episode, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
She can knock out the biscuits and gravy, too. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what. Yeah, these are mama's recipe.
Yeah, she's no joke.
They're good. I'm ready to go back to sleep after filling up my belly with that stuff.
I filled up my glass. I'm not even drinking Mountain Dew this morning. I just filled up my glass with sausage gravy.
So, gotten a couple games in. But, you know, before we talk about our game, let's talk about the rest of the episode here. In Act 1, we're going to talk about some warriors that were designed for us by our forum user, Garen. Or is it Jaren? I don't know.
And we've got an official approval from Battlefront that unfortunately, folks, you're going to like these, but unfortunately, they're only official if we play them in a nationally ranked tournament.
That's right. And we are allowed to play them.
And we are allowed to play them. So, and we've gotten that clear with John Paul and everybody.
Right to the top.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, like John Paul would have a say in that. Sure, guys. Go ahead and play your wife.
Shut up, Steve. Shut up.
Phil says it's legit.
And we're allowed to pencil in. There's three blank spots under each one of us. We can write our own special ruling.
That's what I need to win.
Right. Yeah.
And then redeploy John.
Coming up in Act 2, we're interviewing Jasper O from Wargame Soldiers of Strategy Magazine.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool interview. He's calling from the Netherlands, so that should be
fun.
The
Nederlander.
And then in Act 3, we're going to have our first Version 3 Noob Zone, where we're going to talk about independent teams versus warrior teams.
Noob Zone!
There's been a lot of talk about that on the WWPD forum, I might add.
You didn't get the clink. Hold on.
I didn't get the clink because I hit the
cord. Yeah, you hit the mic cable.
These cords are going to catch fire. Yeah. Uh-huh. Are they shielded?
A lot of interference, a lot of EM interference. All right, so to get back on progress, or back on topic, make some progress on this episode here. Let's get it together, fellas.
Hey, bring it back.
At least we're spinning our wheels aggressively.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. We're not just staring at each other with baggy eyes going, right.
We're doing that too, but... All right, recent games. I played a couple of games recently. I played a game against John where I ran my German Panzergrenadiers.
Aftrax is all I keep facing, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they were a little confusing, though. We got a little confused on the rules.
Because yes,
the rule says they count as tank teams for everything except platoon morale. So that led to some complications, you know? Like, for instance, do you have to make the dismount under fire check? I don't know, because it says all transports dismount.
And you're not a transport.
My guys aren't transports, so yeah, we got a little confused.
This is the only
you do.
This is the only place I think in version 3 that's a little more confusing.
Yeah, yeah. Don't let this.
But it's chock full of awesome. Yeah, and
right.
And
absolutely.
It's not indicative of the rest of the rules.
No, not at all.
The rest of the rules are way clearer, way simpler, way everything.
Yep.
It's just, and this is the only place where I've. Really,
I think this is the
confusion.
Only place where we've really had to be like, all right, let me reread that. What does that mean? Yeah. And I think you can make some common sense decisions on it.
Absolutely.
That being said, though, you know, after we were kind of reading through it, I feel like I left a little more confused, and I'm still a little confused on a few things. So I need to consolidate my thoughts and, you know, send out an email or something and try to get some clarification. But that being said, it was a fun game. We did Gepanzerte Panzergrenadiers versus British Airborne.
All right.
And it was a pretty congested board, so John was able to kind of hold me in place for a while. We did a breakthrough. It was a pretty fun game. It drug on after we had looked at the rules.
First half.
Yeah.
After that, neither one of us cared.
Nah, neither one of us were really. And so that's at the end, John just charged out again, and you know, clearly,
let me charge three Sturmgeschütz and two anti-aircraft guns with my paratrooper. Blah.
Yeah. That's always fun.
But it was a cool game, and it looked cool. And I used that same board in a second game. I just was too lazy to tear the terrain down. So then Sean and I played another game on it. And this time we did counterattack, which is similar to breakthrough. Yeah. And I started in the same table quarter.
Sweet.
And I ran U.S. 3rd Armored Division.
Ooh.
Lots of Shermans. And Sean ran Gepanzer to Panzer Grenadiers.
Sweet. Out of so you forces. Got to figure out those rules again.
Yeah, I got to figure them out again. And I don't think I had any infantry team, so it actually never really came up because he was dismounted. But that was a great game. I'll tell you what, Sean is getting good too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't make any decisions that were stupid, and a few things he did really surprised me. I mean, he was really... hell, he almost pulled it out, to be honest. He almost got me.
Almost got
he almost got me good. All right, so that's what I've been up to. What have you guys been up to?
Well, let's see. I have been modeling like a madman.
Adventures in casting.
Mm-hmm. Adventures in casting, right. Well, we talked to our good buddy Eric and John up from the I-95 guys at Cold Wars. Talked a lot to them about different things. Because one of the things that we're always looking to do, right, is make the things that we do easier, faster, you know, and still have the same quality. So I got into casting. And you guys saw it. I brought them over today. Some completed bocage pieces.
Oh, yeah. They look great.
And I have to admit, I spent some money in the molds because I've been testing things out. Mm-hmm. And I've taken some advice from some folks online. Found a great site. I got to say, Illuminite.com. Mm-hmm. They have, if you're interested in doing casting.
Even an idiot like Luke can do it.
Even an idiot like, and honestly, that's what I did. I brought my laptop down into the garage and watched the video. And as I was watching the video, I was like, okay, well, let me do this. Let me do that. And, you know, watched it a couple times and made it work out. Because, you know, people can explain it to you, but seeing that visual is awesome. So if you get a chance, you just want to see something about that is good. And also, if you look on the WWPD forum under the general chat, there's a thread that says Adventures in Casting. And I can't remember the guy's name, but he, whoever, I can't remember your name, sorry, dude, but thanks for, he actually had a blog, and he has a blog. And he
I looked at that, too.
And he had some really good really good feedback on that and some really good things about the different types of resin. But I'm pretty happy with
these.
They
look great. Did it save you a whole lot of time to do it that way?
Now, here's the deal. It's more expensive.
Right.
But it's consistent.
It's lighter.
It's lighter. So, and, you know, I sent something off to Rob Turner in Thunder Bay, Canada.
Nice.
Right at the beginning
Ontario.
Of the year. Yep. And shipping was ridiculous, like almost $42 to ship
it.
But this is less than half the weight, so that's pretty cool.
How about time wise? How much time does it save you?
Well, here's the deal. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
not much. You spend your time doing different things.
Exactly. Right. I mean, like making the mold, and then again, it does get kind of pricey because you know, 1 pound of that stuff is $30.
Yeah,
you know, almost $30.
But what, like, over time, could you have a bunch of the molds and then do all at once?
Slowly but surely, if I build those up, and,
but you're
you
spending
know,
at kind least of you're spending your time plus at least $25-$35 in mold making. So
right to do it. Yeah. That's been the problem. And then, you know, of course, if you're like me and you know, you have a big learning curve for brand new things like that. You know, you waste, you know, $30 worth of rubber,
like,
and it ends up going up in
like
the trash
acetone can. On your stripping. Oh, your
you got to bring that up again, don't you, son? Gotcha. Okay. The other things I'm working on is hills, and what I've been working on really is not really hills so much as I made those other hills, but I'm working on rocky outcroppings just to show something. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I like about this piece is that you could use it for even 25 millimeter.
Right.
I mean, you could use it for sci-fi, which obviously we're going to have. I'm not supposed to talk about that. And we're going to have some. we're going to have some really. It has a lot of different things you can use it for, and also it's very clearly showing that it's impassable. And the other thing, I've been trying to experiment with some of this, you know, rocky stuff, and I've been using plaster a lot on my hills to see how they work out, but. Yeah, I've gotten into that, and we've got some other projects. John, you were working on some casting stuff too, right?
Yeah, I did some trench sections just for myself, you know, because I've got to make some. Well, actually, for myself and Ted. Ted's doing Sturm. He finally came around. Defensor came back to the Sturm.
Nice.
Which we told him from the get go. So he's going to do that. And plus, just looking at the list, I mean, and I know I'm not really doing it, but I'm going to do it at some point. Fortification lists, etc. They need. I mean, you need a mile of fortifications, and so you know it was fun. You know, I figured I'd just make some. See what
happens. Why not?
Instead of constructing every single one, I said, well, I'm just gonna make one and mold it, and it's been really good.
And the last thing that I've been doing for modeling is I glued them to the base.
Oh, you picked up your Soviets?
I picked up my Soviets from Kai at Falcon Figures. And he painted them, and God bless them, they look fantastic.
Cool.
There's an article on Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine that just came out. I'm sure we'll probably talk about that today. But they talk about using the dip.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened is, in order to make my... I bought a bunch of Soviets. They look pretty good. And I gave a painter a task, and I said, I want these to look as close to these.
Right.
You know, the new ones, the unpainted, I want to look like the painted ones I have. And he used the Dip-It stuff on it, and it worked like a champ, and they look really good. But I forgot how much unpainted Soviet stuff that I gave him, and it was a ton. Like, I have 16 stands of anti-tank rifles, so just F your half-tracks. Bring it with the Soviet, because I have every intention of saying... They're rate of fire too, right?
Yeah. So you have
with volley fire,
with volley fire,
every single anti tank rifle the Soviets ever
pretty
produced.
Much. Yeah, I think yeah,
whatever
I think,
they I'm made short. Millions of those things. You kidding? Yeah.
And then the infantry. I mean, I haven't even finished doing them yet. But I bought all the extra stuff. I'm pulling the Maglaucho. I bought the flamethrowers.
Yep.
The actual scouts.
Get it all.
The actual flamethrowers instead of just putting them in. You know, the actual submachine gun.
Yep.
Teams. I have based. Right now, 32 infantry stands. I want to say like 8 command stands.
Holy hell, man.
And, you know, 4 flamethrowers.
That gives you one-third of your army.
well, see, the thing is, I already have that. So by the time I'm done with this, I will be able to run 3 companies of Soviets with 3 platoons each.
Can you carry it all?
Yeah, really.
It's break heavy.
Back out. Yeah, don't you have back problems, man? You
need no, sure, man.
Yeah, crazy. You need to drop the Soviets.
Well, that's why I got that cart. So I can wheel my army.
Gotcha.
Because it's going to be like 10 boxes high. So, but that's it. So the casting's been fun. Really enjoying that. Like I said, been doing a lot of terrain making and working on those things. And I've got some other upcoming projects down the road. But hey, just real quick, for those of you guys who've been PMing me about Bocage, I will get on it. I'll respond to you real soon. I just got a lot of stuff going on getting this together. So, but it's been a pretty adventurous couple of weeks.
Firing of course, up the mines again.
Well, you know, it's springtime too, so it's tough in the Milia household because we got Cub Scouts, we've got
T-ball,
baseball. Yeah, the Jack the Slugger is back there. He's the greatest thing about being a dad, and you get to watch a kid doing that, is how to relate to your child to teach him something.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, okay, we're gonna swing the bat. How do you hold? He's holding it all funny. Hold it like Darth Vader holds his lightsaber. I'm not joking. Hold it right here like this, and he gets it. He understands that, and he's like,
"All right."
And then I can almost see him in his little Darth Vader mask, squeeing, at the ball. But it's fun. So the first time he hit the ball, it was almost like it was almost like he was more surprised than anything. He hit the ball and just stood there, and they're like, "Run!"
Nice.
And he just runs. Then they're like, stop!
So just to go back to the ATRs real quick, because you got me thinking about them. I painted up 4 for myself as well, just for the HQ attachments. And
I've seen that with the... There will be no...
Now we're being sued duels. By Lucasfilm.
All right, Jack.
Oh, thanks.
Jack playing baseball.
All right. What was I saying? Oh,
I have no idea.
I wanted to mention this. You were talking about how the ones they made so many of them. They actually had a better version, I think, before the one that they used in Flames War, the PTRD.
Right. Yeah,
one before that had a magazine and had semi-automatic fire. And they're like, nah, that's too hard to make. So the ones they wound up making were like single shot, like just pieces of garbage, and they made just zillions of them. They made them all the way through the war. Yeah. They were just useless. I mean,
Well, that's like the submachine gun that was the PBSH. It's like discarded barrels from something else, and it's just it's just this horrible hunk of junk. But who cares when you got 10 zillion of them?
Yeah, exactly. So I painted those guys up, and I'm getting ready to start on some Panzer wagons for the train. Did I show you those things?
Oh, the things that your boy cast.
Yeah, John Sulek cast those, and they're. So the car that the 38T that's attached to the train
sat in.
And as the rules for the train, you can keep the tanks as part of the train, or you can separate them. So when I'm keeping it as part of the train, I'm going to have them sitting in those little cars.
That's awesome.
And I'm finally getting around to painting some of the little German armored cars. I got the the 223 radio and 222s. I have those in Africa Corps,
I was like,
John made that post. I was like, I got to get some of those
because they're awesome.
They're cool, and especially now that Wheeled got a big boost in mobility.
Oh yeah, Ted used the road movement rules.
Yeah,
Oh, man. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I did a recon move against Sean in our game, and you know, I had Jeeps on the road, and they're going 24
yeah,
inches.
Yeah, so you just basically redeployed. Yeah.
Yep, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
because people forget about that recce move. It's not just moving forward. It's side to side.
Yeah, you can go anywhere. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, too. I think one of the things that's going to be required as American players that you bring your own roads with you to the game before you start. You know, throw some roads down real quick and hope they don't notice. You know,
just, hey, man, what's that over there?
Just lay horizontally on the board across your entire field. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize he was going to put those guys over there. Slide.
I'm looking forward to playing Americans again. I'm going to give Soviets a rest and play some Americans for a while.
We have East Front. I mean, the past six months have been East Front.
Yeah, I know. I looked at the Rankings HQ, and I haven't played British in a tournament since I think the last time we played. Jeez. I got second, right?
Jeez.
Right? That's the last time I think I played them. So, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I've got to revisit them.
I'm tired of looking at my rankings. My rankings are like third, fourth,
I'm just
fifth, third, fourth, fifth, fourth, fourth, fourth.
Got to bring it home.
18th, you know? Yeah,
I'm steadily dropping. Getting worse. Getting old.
I know. Well, my last term, I got drugged down.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. You're carrying the dead weight around.
God, man. What can killing I say? Me.
I know,
killing
me. I know. I had to go get Ted to help me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what do you guys say we dive in on these Warriors here?
Okay,
let's read somebody else. Or do you want to read each other's? Or
I want to read Luke's.
All right, here's Luke. So again, these are by Garen on our forum, and he also has a ton of fluff. We're only going to read the rules pieces, but there's like three or four paragraphs of each one of them that are some really. It's actually it's not funny fluff. It's like kind of well thought out and kind of characterful, like
which is totally unexpected on our forums.
Exactly. We were expecting something goofy, you know, like and he blah blah blah. But they're actually like it's like these could be characters
in an alternate universe. This is what happened.
Yeah, right. This is bizarro world. Right. Yeah. Right? Garen, where he like makes
Garen,
sense and do things.
Sliders, you know, WPD.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, it's like Luke's dad was a tanker, so he wanted to be a tanker. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to read them.
So
you got to check it out.
If we weren't such goofballs, this is what we would come up
with. Right. Exactly.
Right. Okay. All right. So Captain Luke, you're a captain. Okay.
Of course.
You're the only one with rank, right? I think you're the only one with rank. Yeah. Me and Steve, we just show up. Yeah.
Obviously, the listeners can identify the leadership in this bunch.
Yeah, obviously. Well, hey, but I'm in charge. Right, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Captain Luke, you're a Warrior team. You're in an M5A1 Stuart.
Big surprise there.
Big shocker. Right, 75 points, fearless veteran. When a player selects Captain Luke, he replaces a light tank platoon leader.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're in charge of your platoon. You got pedal to the metal. Captain Luke was known for his renowned ability to drive through any kind of terrain. Any units that are led by Luke treat hills as open ground.
God bless him.
God, back to old school.
Now using it.
Yep.
All right, Stuart Ace shot. Captain Luke was known to tangle with any sort of tank in his day and come out on top. It was said that he could shoot the whiskers off a cat a mile away. Luke may reroll misses.
Sure can.
And his tank has stable. Has tank.
And so it's a free stable. I think it means no plus one.
Yeah, no plus one.
On the dice.
All right, so upgraded cannon. Uh-oh.
I get a minus one is what it says.
Yeah, right. Captain Luke was often known to tinker with his tank during his training time in England. It's rumored that he even swapped the barrel of his tank for a custom cast high caliber gun, right? You made that out of resin?
That's exactly what it
was. Luke Stewart is 8011. 8011. And has been modified the gun to tank even the toughest German, so he can basically take them all out. 8011, holy crap.
Stuart with no... Ooh, that's good.
Ooh,
that's
roll.
Good.
Stabilizers. Yeah.
Front
right.
armor 12.
That's good.
Yeah. Right, you wish.
Yeah. No, that's a jumbo.
All right. So I'm going to read Steve. Steve is 150 points.
He's worth twice as much as you.
Exactly. Well, on paper.
So just like
on paper.
Our net holdings in real life.
Steve replaces the 2IC of any company. Steve keeps the enemy guessing which of these stories are... Oh, you said don't know what you'll be facing until game time. Steve keeps the enemy guessing which of these stories are true. Steve,
oh, yeah, we skipped the fluff part,
right.
So he's referring to the stories.
Steve is able to join any army list prior to deployment. The player rolls a die to determine what kind of team Steve is.
That's pretty cool.
On a one, he's an MG team with two bazooka, Piat, Panzerfaust teams, whatever. Number two, he's a T-34. Number three, he's a... Panzer 4H, number four, he's an Easy 8 Sherman. Five, he's a captured German train.
He's a whole train.
And six, he's cavalry with two additional cavalry stands. Never surrender. Steve was known for never backing down from a fight, even outnumbered. Didn't matter to him. Steve can ignore motivation checks for himself or his platoon that he's commanding. And he still must take company motivation checks.
Ignore motivation checks. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Right. That's because he... stares uncomfortably at the floor.
That's right. There's, there's conflict, and I'm just like,
oh, look at that.
What's
there
up with the floor? Oh, look at these. All right, I'll read Dirty John here. Dirty John is a fearless veteran SMG team that costs 50 points. Dirty John can attach to any combat platoon that
lowest
is considered infantry. but probably best ROI. You got some pretty cool rules for 50 points. And he's supposed to be a rip paratrooper, right?
So. Yeah.
All right, bombs all around. Dirty John starts with a dice pool of 7 dice. Each time he uses it, he loses a die. On a 5-up, he can call in a bombardment of a 6-gun mortar battery. The battery is off-board and can reach any target that is in line of sight of Dirty John. The battery's rated as veteran.
That's
pretty
that
useful.
Yeah.
All right, and knives in a gunfight. Dirty John was noted at Arnhem as being the one soldier who was known for his reckless fighting style. Soldiers who were hesitant at first to follow him quickly charged after him when he entered into the fray. Units who fail their motivation roll to assault that have Dirty John attached to it may re-roll the attempt using Dirty John's motivation. If the attempt fails a second time, Dirty John will still carry out the assault alone.
That would be the Dirty John leering rule when he
That's
leers
right.
over you.
That's right. He Lyndon B. Johnson's here.
Yeah, exactly. He's the shaved down Sasquatch leaning over you, making you move.
Hey, I am not shaved down.
Yeah, right. You're going with the homeless John looking kid. Right. You need, where's that green army jacket?
Yeah, that's what
you need.
Okay.
Need to patch it up a little. Maybe spill some spaghetti
that
on it.
That
was
like
awesome.
A homeless person.
So those are cool little warrior team guys.
Right.
Again, we're getting them made official.
That's right. Exactly. Well, they're official for us in any tournament that we
right.
play.
We're allowed to run them, so
right.
respect
so
that.
If you don't believe me, you can contact Sean Paul yourself.
That's right.
Exactly. But I've got a note signed by him.
He signed it.
Yep.
Send it to your mom.
That's right.
Luke showed up with it pinned
all
to his shirt.
That's right.
Right.
Hey, guys, I brought this from John Paul. All right, so what else we got coming up? What's some new stuff coming out? Of course, we got Blood, Guts, and Glory.
That's the word on the street, right?
Yeah.
That's word on the street. We had it in our hands.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Yep, and I think we have a copy on the way. So we'll have a review on the website soon, yeah. and we'll talk about it next episode.
And hey, just to piggyback on some stuff Steve posted on the forum, and I know we talked about it, a lot of people have been asking us for point values and things like
right.
that. We did get the playtest versions of them, but we don't want to comment specifically on those things because – without the book in hand, we can't
right.
really, because some of those point values changed from the time we got it.
Sure.
From the time we went to the printer.
Yeah, because when we saw it, they're like half pages didn't have pictures.
Yeah,
so
right.
It said insert
changed.
Picture
right.
here.
Right, and a lot of the layout was,
yeah.
so we don't want to be wrong. We don't want to tell people yeah. and be incorrect.
Yeah. And the things that we've been commenting on are the things that we know for a fact absolutely
right.
100% are true, because we don't want you going out there and
right.
it. But
absolutely.
What we can tell you is buy tank destroyers.
Yep.
You got that
buy,
right.
If you have not bought your tank destroyers, place your order with whoever you place an order with.
Sure.
And get tank destroyers.
Yeah, well, the things we can tell you that are definite
yeah.
are the U.S. are going to have a medium tank company with all kinds of Sherman upgrades. You can upgrade individual Shermans to M4A3s, M4A3 Lates, Easy 8s, Jumbos.
So get your modeling 76s. Big boy pants on.
Yeah, you can get a lot of different Sherman types. You're going to have an armored rifle company, which, you know, trained or veteran, not a
yeah.
whole lot of new options for them, except they can be supported by these new kinds of Shermans.
And all the cool new version 3 rules.
Right, all the cool new version 3 rules. And, of course, there's the Tank Destroyer Company, which we're all
Boing.
Very excited about. And yeah. that's basically either M10s or M18s as your company type.
And the M10, M18 debate rages on.
I know. It's M18 all the way for me, man.
Rages.
Yeah. And then you also have, for your support options, they're throwing in an M36 Jackson. Which is pretty
AT-14,
AT-14.
You know, it's basically a 90mm gun.
Yep.
So.
He's got Detroit's finest, so he's kind of in between the M10 and M18 on mobility. He's got 14-inch movement. So, yeah, I'm going to have to get some of those. You better believe that.
And mm-hmm. I'm not playing any of
them. The Germans have 3 types of lists, and they're all auto-attack. You've got the Feldharnheil Panzers, which are FHH. There you go.
Yeah.
And they are reluctant trained, and they come with Panthers and platoons of 3. You can also
mm-hmm.
get Panzer 470s.
Which I've got all of that.
Yeah, I need to get some of those now. I forget which versions of the Panzer 470s they are.
Later ones.
Yeah.
They don't have – all the difference is overloaded or something.
I don't remember
or
off
unreliable.
The top of my head.
What, one of the two.
Yeah. And then they've got like the drilling half-tracks. Those things look cool, man, with the 3 anti-aircraft guns.
Mm-hmm.
So those are going to be cool. And a lot of their troops are like assault rifle Panzerfaust teams
mm-hmm.
mounted in half tracks. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
course, they're reluctant trained, so don't get them pinned. Keep them in the half tracks, fight them like tanks.
Yeah, but jeez, man.
Yeah, and then you've got two kinds of infantry lists. I forget exactly what they are. One's like a Panzergrenadier, and one's a Sturmgrenadier, or Sturm Infantry. Yeah. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. And they're kind of similar, with just a few subtle differences and support options. You know, one's kind of your standard MG teams, and one's your assault rifle.
The Germans got to get used to putting a ton of stuff on the table because it's all cheap.
I think it's really, a lot of people are down on it. They're like, yeah, this is going to suck. I think it's going to be cool because it's a huge changeup, right? Now you have the best equipment. I mean, assault rifle, Panzerfaust, backed up by Panthers, but they suck.
But it's all sick, but you know what? Sickly old man.
I mean, you know, it's the way it was, right?
Right, exactly. Plus, it's a fun new challenge. And I think people need to not discount them until they've tried it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that, you know, if I was having to pick, you know, what am I going to make my next tournament list out of, and this book is in bounds, whether I'd pick one, but, you know, you're right. It is different, because, you've said this before, how many confident vet grenadier lists can you have?
How many do you need?
Want?
I mean, how many do you
need? You got a gazillion of them already, so if you want
confident... Do you
want
to run the one out of forces, or out of, you know...
Or any of the other 12 books?
Yeah, right? The only drawback, I think, to those lists is the auto attack.
Yeah, that's
the only
tough.
Thing that I think is the...
But you know.
I do know.
But at least you know, right?
Yeah, exactly. You and I love attacking. Yeah. I really think reluctant trained Panthers could be... I mean, they're 130 points apiece.
Well, think about...
Or 35.
The way the missions are, I mean, I don't know how you would get... I mean, you know, somebody puts 10 half-tracks and 8 Panthers around your objective. How do you get that off?
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know how to get rid of that.
Yeah, I was having real trouble getting his head, you know... backed up when he's running around with just 6 of them.
I mean, now, what's the issue with Panthers now? You've got 8 of them. If you have 8 of them, that's 1,500 points.
Right.
You know, you've got 3.
Yeah.
They just get flanked and you lose 2 and that's it for them. Now I've got 11.
I can run them like
leapfrogging up.
Oh,
yeah,
you
run them like Shermans.
Right.
It could be mean. Now, of course, you know, they get bailed and they're staying bailed.
Still front armor.
Still front armor, still 10, and you know, with the turret rules now, you're not quite as scared about getting flanked.
Well, that's a big thing. That was one of the things in one of the threads that people were talking about. You know, when we're talking about the light tank company, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a damn Panther, the thing you want to do is move and turn your turret.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
so I'm excited to see it play out. I actually, you know, when I first got the book, I was like, yeah, reluctant trained, they suck. But then I kind of thought about it. 11 Panthers, regardless of rating, is pretty damn scary. And it's not just 11 Panthers. It's 11 Panthers with plenty of points left over
more. Well, I look at it like with the Soviet thing.
Yeah.
You know, you play confident trained Soviets.
Right.
Holy crap, you get a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you sure
do. And, you know, you roll up there, you got 30 tanks.
Yeah.
No matter how you cut it, it's 30 tanks.
Yeah.
And they may
still
suck.
Got to shoot them.
Well, the reluctant trained still shoot the same, right? You don't take a negative.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
That's the trick. You just got to remember, on your shooting step... You're no worse than anybody else.
I don't care. You know? I mean, the Russians, if you played an East Front list, you know, I don't know, like 4 detachment, you know? So you guys are going to roll off them to see who gets to attack.
Right.
So God forbid you get to put, you have that many Panthers.
Yeah.
Sitting in woods.
On
the ground.
Woo. Yeah. I don't know. 4 detachment's a pretty strong list.
Yeah.
That's going to have trouble.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So I think it's going to be a whole new dynamic. I'm actually really looking forward to it. I think I'm gonna.
Having said all that, I'm not really, but
yeah,
but it is different. It's just,
maybe
it's
not, that'll be the list that I run for my German tournament list that I run this year, just to screw around.
You have to do it. Do you have our New Year's resolution somewhere? I think you wrote them down because
I did,
don't have.
But I think
someone
I
did.
Here.
I couldn't find them. I looked for them too. Well, we'll just have to
our users
back to the episode.
Will immolate us when we don't do them all.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think I've already failed all of mine. So
I'm actually gonna get one done.
Yeah.
One.
You failed
yours immediately. I'm going to find another army. Kablam.
Well, you know, the only way for us to get this done is for us to put money on it. Because if we'd bet even $1, we would have been like, whatever. Been down to it. So.
Yeah. But what else is... Well, we have some more new stuff coming out. We're going to talk about what we know of the new starter set, which is not much. It's kind of rumor. But we'll talk about that in a little bit.
We shouldn't talk about our expansion. But yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later. All right. So... next time around, we'll talk about some plans to expand. So, all right, going on. I mean,
that's pretty much it for Act 1.
Between version 3 and Blood Guts and Glory, and you're still rolling with Red Bear and Gray Koala. You got, you know, you got so much happening.
I mean, there's a lot going on, man. A lot of stuff to choose from.
I know.
It's an exciting time for Flames of War players. I need to be independently
wealthy.
I know.
So I can, you know, stay at home and do this stuff.
My painting queue is stupid.
Mine too. Staggering.
Mine too.
Did you see the box of crap? It's
yeah. If you guys haven't yet, come to the forum and sign up on the post your painting queue thread.
John has a problem. You have an eBay problem though with Flames of War.
Yeah.
Like John, how many bids did you put out there?
When? Oh, I put
72 is what you told me.
Yeah, I put 72 bids out on different stuff. Yeah.
That's so he's like, oh, I got a box of this, and it was really cheap. Yeah, but now you've got another box of that.
That's insane. Right. Well, you keep loading me up. I got freaking a Tiger 2 to paint for you, you jerkweed.
You have five more Tigers. You're coming up soon.
And then we order stuff. Why am I ordering stuff from... yeah. From Waterloo Minis, when I've got
Carious, that's why. Yeah. That's the only reason I bought five Tigers.
Yeah, I'm not
because I got Carious.
I'm not playing that clown. I am morally opposed to it.
I'm playing. I'm playing them all day long.
Yeah, my drawer of stuff to be painted just never shrinks.
Well, I'm going to do what you did, which is I've got to get the little blister, the box set plastics, and start putting all my bits in it.
That's what
I probably got enough bits to make all the paratroopers I want. Yep. I just can't find them.
You just melt down the resin and recast it. These trench sections look like they've got a barrel. Yeah, that's right. They've all melted down. I'm going to be going back to Kai and Madison to get some more stuff painted because I'm going to keep.
Yeah,
I'm just going to keep it going. I mean, they did a really nice job.
Cool.
And my boy Sunbay, I can't remember his. I think it's Jeff.
So bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so, the guy on the
he's a great painter, man. Have you seen some of his stuff?
Yeah, I have.
He's
yeah,
great it's good painter. Stuff. And I can't remember the guy's name. I'm gonna call out to you. Man, I suck. I should have had my laptop out in front of me.
Sorry, they didn't
but whoever you are that you just posted your German army online, you and I both commented on.
Yeah, yeah,
holy
yeah,
cow,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is that one of the best paint jobs.
That was nice.
That is really phenomenal.
Good. Yeah, we got a bunch of really great painters posting stuff on our forums.
Yeah,
they're good stuff.
I'm gonna look at CGR painters too, because they've got some really good stuff. I might send some stuff to them to get done.
Cool.
Because I've been really impressed. I looked at their website and they have some really good stuff. And
the Bocage won't let you paint nothing, son.
That's right.
I don't like painting.
That's fine.
I'm just painting. Works out. I did just hit that with the Southern
accent. Painting. He don't like painting.
That boy don't like no painting unless it's a fence, man.
A friend of mine from North Carolina said the way you talk North Kakalaki.
Yeah.
Is you just take out the middle syllable.
Oh, yeah,
he says, I'm from Hickory, North Carolina.
Hickory.
So we'll just take out the middle syllable whenever I want to talk like that.
All right, let's do it.
That would be huge.
Huge.
That would be huge. Drop all H's. The way you talk like Luke is just drop first H's.
Let me just say this too.
Cry Avic.
Hello. I'm huge.
that's the horrible part of my lineage is that my parents are from New York City, but they lived here so long that they lost most of their accent.
Gotcha.
But I grew up here in the quote unquote South.
Yeah.
So I got a Northern/Southern accent mixed up.
Good job.
Yeah. It's a good accent.
Yeah, it's really horrible.
All right. What do you guys say we give Jasper a call here and we get this interview going?
Let's do it.
Yeah. What's the Skype noise? All right. So we'll be right back for Act Two. Running out of quality WWPD articles to read? Wishing you had a hard copy gaming magazine you could leave in your, office? Wargames, Soldiers, and Strategy is a bi-monthly historical miniature gaming magazine based around a broad theme and containing detailed painting guides, army lists, battle reports, reviews, and scenarios for beginner and veteran wargamers alike. The magazine is 84 pages filled with beautiful artwork, diagrams, maps, and photographs. Wargames, Soldiers, and Strategy can be found at Barnes & Noble in either the History or Modeling and Hobby section, or find them on the web at wssmagazine.com. Get your subscription now and use the coupon code WWPD to save an additional 15% over the already low cover price. Wargames, Soldiers, and Strategy. It's time to play with history.
HMGS, the Historical Miniatures Gaming Society, is a nonprofit, charitable, and educational organization with over 2,000 members worldwide. The main purpose of HMGS is to promote historical miniature wargaming as both a legitimate hobby and as an alternative method for the study of military history. Chapters are conveniently located across the United States and accept members from around the world. Chapter membership offers several advantages, including discounted admissions to all HMGS conventions, a periodic newsletter, and advance notice about upcoming events. HMGS holds three historical miniature gaming conventions each year: Cold Wars in March, Fallen in November, and the one and only Historicon in July. This has been called the mother of all wargaming conventions by the Wall Street Journal. At HMGS conventions, you can find hundreds of games to play and see all the latest miniatures at the world's largest hobby shop. For more information, check us out on the web at hmgs.org. It is both informative and fun. Join HMGS online at hmgs.org. We encourage you to join us in promoting our exciting hobby. You'll be glad you did. And we're back with Act 2. Steve-O.
All right. Well, we are interviewing Jasper O. from, War Games, Soldiers, and Strategy, but also Ancients Warfare magazine. Is that correct, Jasper?
Yeah, that's correct.
Cool. And I don't know how to say your last name. That's why I said Jasper O. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us a little bit of your background.
My last name is Oorthuis. That's a Dutch name with lots of double diphthongs and everything to make it extra complicated. Sounds like my
usual Saturday night.
Yeah.
Double diphthongs.
I had to do a presentation at an academic conference one time, and the chairperson also had trouble with my last name, so I promised that I would take a stage name if I had to do it more often. But I haven't done anything since.
We're very familiar with stage names.
That's right.
That's true. So what do you want to know?
How'd you get started in gaming? Let's start there.
Mm-hmm. It actually comes last.
Oh, okay. Well, let's start with the first.
I've been a modeler for about 25 years or so. I got into it through there's a tin figure museum here, a National Tin Figure Museum. Cool. And my grandparents took me there when I was like 10 or 11, and it was really cool. And they sold these Prince August molds. I don't know if you guys know them. You cast your own 25-millimeter soldiers, and I thought that was really cool. And, because we didn't have nervous parents at the time yet, I got them for my birthday. Only my brother has some scars.
Did you get a big pot of lead with them?
you could buy it. Yeah, you can. The Prince August actually sells some kind of tin alloy.
Yeah.
And you can cast your own soldiers. And that was really cool. And it came, I think, with a little booklet with some very simple wargaming rules.
Right.
Oh, cool.
But at the time, my English wasn't very good yet. And I didn't have any friends who were interested in that kind of stuff. So I was aware of wargaming for a very long time, but I didn't actually play any till a couple of years ago. Wow. I just mostly, I was into modeling, and I went from the tin soldiers into, Tamiya, Artillery, Dragon, 35th scale stuff,
right.
Other sizes, other scales, experimenting a bit. I still approach wargaming. I feel like I approach it from a painting and modeling point of view.
Very cool. So that's kind of the aspect that appeals to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really like the, the social aspect and, the tournament or just gaming, playing with other people. But, I noticed that when I get into a new thing, I just look at, okay, which models are cool. And I just sort of, just go into it without any actual plan that probably makes.
I can completely identify with that, especially like with Warhammer and stuff. I was like, chicks with guns, sisters of battle, I'll take them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what got you into publishing?
Well, I needed a job.
That's a pretty good answer.
I studied history, and that I don't know how it works over there, but over here that, people generally say, okay, what you're going to do with history, with an MA, congratulations. And I was planning to become a PhD student at the time, and that didn't work out, so I had to do something. And a friend of mine worked at a publishing company, and he was like, oh, we need a new editor for this, the world business magazines. Mm-hmm. So I applied, and I got the job, and I became a business magazine editor about conferences and meetings and business events.
That sounds so fun.
Sounds so interesting.
I could tell by the sheer excitement in your voice.
So it was kind of a strange company, but I learned a lot there, and I have to say, I mean, of all the magazines you could have done, mine was not so bad because, you know, for business magazines, for business events, all these expensive hotels want to get articles published about them. So I got to go there and
that's cool.
And enjoy expensive hotels that I couldn't afford normally.
those are great perks.
Yeah. I can see it now. Top five meeting places.
Yeah. That kind of stuff.
So you decided, well, I've learned the ropes. Let me do something that's interesting to me. And that's how you got into these magazines, right?
Yeah, that's long and short of it. Except I had to find somebody who was willing to, basically finance that crazy ideas I had.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's cool. Well, we're glad you did because their product is really good. Can you tell us, some of our listeners may not have had a chance to look at the magazine or see it. Can you tell us the name of the magazine, what it's all about, et cetera?
I assume you're referring to War Game Soldier and Strategy here?
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. It's not my own. I mean, I started with Ancient Warfare, but we bought War Game Soldier and Strategy from a Spanish publisher about 14 months ago. Right. They used to publish this magazine in both Spanish and English. And in 2010, they just decided to quit publishing the English version, and it wasn't exactly clear what they were going to do with it, or if anything. So me and my boss, we went to visit them when we bought the magazine, and we decided to relaunch it as a real historical wargaming magazine that's not particularly tied to any type of rule set or anything. Our most important thing is that, you know, it should be fun.
Right.
It should be clear that historical wargaming is fun. A lot of people feel like it's intimidating. You know, you go to pages like the miniatures page and you see, you know, a gazillion different rule sets, lots of different scales. And you know, I probably shouldn't say it, but there's sometimes this kind of attitude that historical wargaming should be complicated, should be an accomplishment to get into it. You know, you need to study a lot.
Well, they make it a little bit more, they kind of forget that it's a game and make it a historical simulation, which is not what it is. There's a reason it's called gaming and not simulation.
Yeah. Right. we're definitely on the game side. You know, it needs to be fun. Mm-hmm. And if it's educational at the same time, I mean, that's perfectly fine. I would be lying if I would, you know, with my historical background, I wouldn't appreciate a game that, you know, just basically got inspiration from history and nothing else, but, you know, it's a game.
Right, right. Is that one of the missions of the magazine? I mean, I see that there's a lot of, you guys in your articles have a lot of backstory. I mean, you do a lot of pictures of the minis and review of the miniatures and things, but I also noticed you guys do a lot of backstory. Is education one of the missions of the mag?
No, not really. I mean, if you compare the articles in War Game Soldiers and Strategy to Miniature War Games or War Games Illustrated, I think you would see that the actual amount of what they call potted history is actually fairly limited. We try to give a very, very short intro, and then we get into the game. I mean, if you want to learn about the history, I don't think a wargaming magazine is the place to do it. You go to, you know, if it's for ancients or medieval, we have perfectly good magazines for that. You know, there's dozens of publishers who publish lots of wonderful books every year. The internet can be particularly useful. You know, do a little bit of your own research, but in the end, the wargaming magazine should be about wargaming.
Right. Where do you guys come up with the ideas for different articles that you come up with in Wargame Soldiers Strategy?
Well, basically, the editor, Guy Bowers, he lives in the UK, and he tends to come over here about, you know, 3 or 4 times a year, and then we just have a weekend of wargaming brainstorming, and it goes pretty quick.
Is there a lot of gaming involved in this brainstorming session?
Well, we try to, but, you know, we usually talk so much, you don't get a game in.
Yeah.
it's basically like you guys could do it. You know, you just you grab a beer, you sit around a table, and you go, okay, what would be fun to do something about? And you just, you know, throw ideas out. We have some, we try to incorporate some proportionality of different periods and sizes and scales. so that we don't, you know, you don't do your own personal preferences all the time.
Right. So you guys tend to focus on one theme per edition, and then you have sort of some other sprinkled articles in. How do you guys decide what theme you're going to do, and when did you make the decision to have each article or each issue sort of focus on one big idea?
The themed thing is actually goes back to the original Spanish publication. They already had what they called dossiers. And we do the same thing actually in Ancient Warfare and Medieval Warfare magazine. They're also themed. The theme there is much stronger. It's really like it's, you know, 80% of the magazine. And we found that having a theme actually helps. It helps you explore different avenues to the same topic, which makes it, you know, makes it more interesting than just doing random stuff. This was my motivation for Ancient Warfare doing themes, but also works for WSS. We figured if you just do, you know, random articles every time, you're going to end up with, you know, the big famous battles every single issue and not all the other interesting stuff that happened as well. And it can serve as inspiration for a game.
Right.
And, you know, how we decide the themes, it's, you know, it's pretty easy with six issues a year. So you have to have, you know, a World War II issue. You have to have a Napoleonics issue. You have to have an Ancients issue.
Right.
Three more. And then you just go, okay, we've done this year. So next year we'll do that and just mix it up a bit.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So you mentioned Ancients Warfare, Medieval Warfare. Are those the three magazines that sort of fall in your realm, or are there more?
No, that's what we have.
Cool.
We started out with Ancient Warfare about almost 6 years ago, and then last year we added Medieval Warfare. That was planned, and WSS sort of came in because the opportunity was there. And we're thinking about other historical magazines or maybe in a reenactment direction, but there's no firm plans yet.
That made John's eyes light up.
Reenactment, yay!
Yay, World War II LARPing.
Hey, pipe down over there.
So, how many people do you have on your team? Just out of curiosity.
Well, there's now in our office here. There's me and an editor for Medieval Warfare. There's Christy who does our art direction media. Mm-hmm. We have hired a new guy who's going to help with administration. And there's the editor in England. That's it.
Cool. You've got to have a full-time photographer, though, because the pictures in the magazine are just crazy.
Yeah, they're awesome. They are great.
I mean, you know, when you look at – well, oddly enough, I'm actually looking at the magazine right now. When you look at the Dutch infantry, it's just the pictures just mm-hmm. are incredible.
Luke's all about them pictures.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, but we actually don't. It's not – that hard to make pictures. It's, the point is just getting, you know, the good topics and good subjects to photograph. Mm-hmm. That's right. Actually harder with, you know, with a good camera and if a little knowledge about light and I have to admit, you know, some wizardry on Photoshop, you can make
right.
You can make pretty much any picture look good.
Yeah, but those skills, you know, don't shortchange yourself. I mean, yeah, these pictures great. Are cut above, so even if it's a sort of an amateur approach, you guys have really done a great job with it.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. And who has time to paint all this stuff? I mean, you guys have, I mean, the magazine is full. Luke is over here turning the pages. It's just full of pictures of giant painted armies.
Yeah, I need somebody to paint some Ancients for me, so I'm trying to figure out who your painter is.
All right.
Well, a lot of times, you know, if somebody comes up with an idea for an article and wants to write an article, you know, the first question that guy is going to ask, okay, have you got pictures?
Right.
Do you have a nicely painted army yourself? And surprisingly enough, a lot of times that is the case. But he goes to, you know, he's in the UK and there's great shows almost every week there, and he just drives all over the country and it goes to these shows where there's demo games.
Oh, okay.
And takes lots of pictures, and sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not, and sometimes we ourselves actually go and you know have projects and paint like crazy to get the magazine full of of painted figures.
That sounds like kind of a dream job. I'm not going to lie. Going to conventions all the time, taking pictures. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, except sometimes it comes after the normal job, and it's like, okay, now it's hobby time. I have to produce this project because, you know, the next issue needs pictures of XYZ.
Yeah, we know a little something about that.
Yeah, we got to do the same thing for some of our stuff. I noticed that you guys have some contributors, and I noticed you had you know, somebody I'm definitely familiar with. Is you got Rick Priestley writing a few articles for you that I found very interesting. How did you get hooked up with Rick?
Before you answer, I have to let you know that there should be some kind of sound effect here. When John says Rick Priestley, it should have a little sound effect that says, oh, because Rick Priestley is one of John's big idols. So
he's done a ton for, you know, miniature wargaming. I mean, definitely more in the, you know, 40K field.
Yeah,
but,
40K.
Yeah, him and Jervis Johnson. I mean, Jervis is really the guy for me as well. But anyway, so how did you guys get hooked up with Rick?
Well, Rick used to work for Games Workshop, as you know.
Yeah.
And he quit something like 18 months ago, or was made redundant or something like that. And the news came out on TMP, and we just sent him an email, basically.
Wow.
He's that, huh?
Yeah, almost. It did help that I knew he was his background is actually archaeology.
Yeah.
And he'd been reading Ancient Warfare for a couple of years, and I knew that. And he'd actually written me sometimes that he was a fan of the magazine. So I was like, that might just help. That was, you know, the funny too, because the first time we met, we were like, ooh, it's Rick Priestley. And he goes, hi, I'm Rick Priestley, and I'm a fan of Ancient Warfare.
It's dumbfounded. That's very cool. How do you get your other contributors, all the people that contribute articles?
People can just email Guy, say, I have an idea for the magazine, and he's very happy to listen.
Cool. Very cool.
Basically. I mean, it's just, yeah. The more people from most varied background, the better.
Outstanding.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of feedback from our listeners that really liking the reviews that you put in there. And I think that's just a great idea the way you guys do. You know, just a quick review, you know, with some pictures on that. I just can't tell you how great we think that is, you know, especially when you start, especially when obviously you're getting some things that we're into, like, you know, tanks and modern U.S. support weapons teams. But anyway.
Well, it's really good for getting an idea of manufacturers, right? Because I looked through there and saw a bunch of manufacturers I wasn't familiar with, and you go check out their website and all that stuff. So, yeah, right. It really helps me as well, and I think your readers and our readers really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
Yeah.
So how often is this magazine and your other magazines published? Are they all bi-monthly?
Yeah, all of them.
Cool. And what kind of lead time do you have for these, for the, like, articles you get written in? You know, how far ahead are you?
Because
around here we're about 30 seconds. Yeah. Oh my god, we gotta put an article out.
That's right.
Let's do this.
Well, obviously, 30 seconds would be a little bit a difficulty with a magazine. I can sort of count back for you if you like.
Sure.
Sort of by the time it arrives in stores. I mean, most of your listeners are in America, right?
Right.
So by the time it arrives there, it's spent about a month getting there. Because it's actually shipped there in a container.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And let's see, a month. Yeah. And then it takes about 2.5 weeks to actually print it and transport it. It's printed in Eastern Europe. So it takes a couple days. Actually, getting it ready to be printed takes 2 to 3 weeks. Because it has to, you know, all the layout and all the preparation, getting all the photos together. So that's your minimum time.
So that's 10 weeks minimum.
It sometimes takes, you know, it has to be 10 weeks because somebody at the very last minute, you know, there's a screw up or somebody doesn't do what he promised to do. and you know, there's usually, there's a spare articles, but, ideally, you plan the articles about 2 to 3 months before that so that, you know, your author who comes up with an idea has some time to actually prepare the articles, take his photos, send it in, get feedback. You know, it has to be proofed, although some of that is in that 3 weeks of preparation time. So it can easily take 4 to 5 months between somebody going, I would like to write an article, and actually on paper – in a store in the U.S.
Gotcha. So you have any scoop on any upcoming articles for us, since we're probably a few months ahead now?
Yeah, but you would have to ask Guy for the specific articles. I can tell you that the next issue is going to be to your liking, probably. It's going to be all about airborne operations in World War II.
Yay! Awesome.
Very cool.
And there was much producing.
In about a week, so it should be in the U.S., I guess somewhere in May or maybe just June. I don't know. It depends a little bit. There's always, you know, we send it to the distributors in North America, and they try to, they have extra spacing in there with transport and everything. We're going to focus in that issue a lot on skirmish wargaming World War II, but there's going to be more company level in the issue after that.
Cool. And just for our listeners, what kind of rule sets do you prefer when you're playing in your spare time?
I have been playing, I'm still a fan of Warhammer Ancient Battles. Mm-hmm. You know, with my Ancients background, I have to do that. We have been experimenting a lot with platoon level World War II for this issue, and we've actually been painting up a platoon. And somebody's been trying to get me into Flames of War, so
I don't know who that could be.
Actually, yeah, well, I've been listening to your podcast, and that helped too, because, you know, get me triggered. It also helped that it was actually for sale in a more or less local game store for me, and that's very rare in this country. Mm-hmm. So I've been going there, and as I said in the beginning, you know, I don't make a list and go, this is going to be my company. Right. I just went, oh, I like late war Germans. Oh, that's pretty. That's nice. And end up with random stuff. But
you know. Right.
I do the same thing.
That is the bane of all war games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, it probably is.
My bane is, all right, I got these 3 tanks, but you know what? I only need 14 to run a whole company of them, so let me just buy 11 more.
That is totally you. You don't buy platoons, you buy
that's
armies.
Called psychosis.
Yeah, it's a little insane.
You have a problem.
Yeah, I really do.
Hello, my name's Steven.
Hello, Steven.
I'm addicted to wargaming.
So what magazines do you read, Jasper? What things do you subscribe to?
Actually, very few at the moment. And that's mostly because after having worked in magazine publishing for actually about more than a decade now, I can't read a magazine properly anymore.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Seriously.
Are you editing it?
Yeah.
I look at a magazine, I go, oh, yeah, why did they do that? Oh, there's a typo here.
They need another picture
here.
Well,
that's a good idea. Maybe we should try that.
Yeah.
Your mind gets strange.
No idea what article you just read or what the topic was or anything, right?
Not absorbing anything. That's funny.
That is hilarious. You're like, oh, this typeface is cool. We should use it, man.
God, this is the third typo in the second page.
It's totally ruined it for you.
It's very strange, but it gets and that's one reason why I don't want to. I generally don't want to read the magazines when we've just published them.
Yeah.
One reason is that I'm already on the magazine after that, or maybe the one after that, but also because the experience isn't and. Any magazine editor is going to recognize this. You know, your magazine comes back from the printer. You get this, you know, nice big box. You open it up. It's all nicely in plastic. You cut the plastic. It smells like fresh ink. You open it up, and the first thing you see is, how did I miss that?
Yeah, that's why I don't listen to our podcasts afterwards, because they're so rife with mistakes and errors that I just get depressed and I drink myself to sleep.
Well, I drink myself to sleep. It's every day, so who cares?
Yeah, the difference is it doesn't stare at you in black and white.
Yeah, yes. Fair enough.
It talks at us.
It's my voice forever in the ether. All right, Jasper. Yeah. Well, I think we're gonna wrap this up. So to recap, how can our listeners grab a hold of your magazine?
Well, the easiest way to find it is to go to wssmagazine.com, and you can subscribe from there. You can buy back copies there. You can buy them both in print and as PDFs. Cool. And if you want to just see them sometime, there's a big button on the right side of the page that says find a store, and you click that and you type in your zip code or your postal code, and it will show you where the nearest store is.
Very cool. And what retailers carry your magazine here in the States and for listeners abroad too?
Well, we have the most most retailers, the easiest ones to find are the Barnes & Nobles in the States. Not right. all of them, but many. Mm-hmm. Near 500 of them.
Yeah, I went and checked ours. We have them. We got
There you go. There.
Pretty cool.
And in the UK, WH Smith, lots of independents. In Germany, it's at various big railway stations. We're trying to get it into more and more stores all the time.
Very cool. Very cool.
And our listeners can save 15%, right?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So if you go to the WSS site and you subscribe and you type in the code WWPD, you save 15% on a year-long subscription, right?
That's right.
Yep. On anything, actually. You can use it for anything. You're going to buy anything in a store, you know.
Oh, wow.
Somebody's actually done that one time. It was like 600 euros, 10 kilos in magazines, and it was like all at once. You can use the discount code for that if you want to.
Wow. Cool. Holy cow.
So for people like me who can't just buy one, like, well, I only need 30 to have the whole collection.
I can make a quilt out of them. I can sleep and read, and I'm good to go.
And so for any of our listeners who might be interested in advertising, how does one go about hooking up with you guys?
Just contact us. There's a contact us button on any of the magazine pages at the top right, and we'll be happy to help you further.
And cool. Give them the code WWPD, and you won't get anything off, but it'll sure make us look good.
Well, you know, yeah, sure. Tell us how you found us.
Go ahead, John.
All right. Well, thanks. I mean, I think we're just about done here. Again, for our listeners, it's WSSmagazine.com. That's War Game Soldiers and Strategy. Lots of great articles. We all three have subscriptions to this magazine.
Love it.
We really, really like it. It's really something that you guys ought to check out. So thanks again, Jasper O.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jasper.
How come this is the only name? Orthos, right?
Ortaj.
Oh, damn it. I thought I was going to say I was the only person.
Luke thought he was like, I'm not even going to try. I can't pronounce anything.
This is the first time ever I've been able to pronounce something.
All right, guys. Jasper, thank you again so much, and we'll be right back after the break.
If you're listening to this podcast, let's face it, you're a geek. Why not proudly wear it like a badge of honor? Visit wargamingshirts.com and find your uniform. Historical, sci-fi, board games, and other wargaming culture, we've got it all, and we're expanding the line every day. We've even got a line for the ladies. Our shirts are high quality and come in a huge variety of designs, colors, and sizes. So check us out right now at wargamingshirts.com and expand your geek wardrobe. Hetzer, Die Roll, Panzerfaust, Sturmovik, Infantry, Red Bear, Stutzpunkt, Version 3. These are all things I'm tired of hearing about. If you're not, though, please go to the new WWPD forum. You can find it under Community in the top navigation bar.
Hey, kids. Dirty John here from WWPD. I want to talk to you about a serious illness, WWPD addiction. WWPD addiction affects nearly 50% of the WWPD listening community. But there is hope. To ease your symptoms, we offer a WWPD News from the Front After Hours. After Hours are special episodes of News from the Front recorded after a regular session and available for a nominal price of $1. Each treatment regimen lasts between 30 minutes and 1 hour, offering additional shenanigans both informative and fun to help ease these symptoms of WWPD addiction.
As with all new treatment programs, please talk to your doctor before beginning any After Hours program. Serious side effects may include uncontrollable laughter or increased hobby purchases. Seek help immediately for a painting session lasting more than 4 hours, as serious, permanent relationship issues may result.
See WWPD.net for purchasing details. WWPD After Hours, helping ease your addiction pain.
And we're back with Act 3.
All right, that was a good interview with Jasper. Thanks again to Jasper.
Jasper Ornitoads.
Nah, you lost it. Nah, Ornitoads. More diphthongs in there, dude.
Exactly.
Diphthongs. Gotta get your dip tet, huh? Yeah, we gotta get a dip tet.
You're horrible.
So, Act 3. Here we go. Briefly, and this is still kind of rumor. This is not confirmed. I don't know this for sure. But the new starter set for Flames of War is coming soonish.
So this is the equivalent of the Open Fire.
This is the equivalent of the Open Fire, and it's now called Achtung. And the rumor is that the models inside are going to be plastics. Plastic Shermans and Plastic Stugs. Again, that's a rumor. I've not seen them confirmed, but this is the talk of the town. Everybody's saying they saw some at a New Zealand convention recently. I forget which one it was. Maybe FlamesCon? I don't know. So don't take my word for it.
I finally got a prediction right.
Yeah.
I finally got a prediction right.
It You know, hopefully that comes to pass. I would love to see some Battlefront Shermans in plastic. I think that would be great. But we shall see. I'm excited about that, though. And one thing I missed, I meant to talk about this in Act 2, is there's also a new book coming out called Know Your Enemy. And that book is a basically updated DOS book for version 3. It's late war only, but it's going to have all of the official stats for things in late war, bringing them into version 3. So if you're concerned about your U.S. 81mm mortars and you're not grown up enough to say these guys should have direct fire, I'm just kidding about that. That was a low blow. I'm not trying to be a jerk.
Take the TMP style.
But, you know, people are like...
You just said it before I said it.
Yeah, I mean, if they're supposed to have it. You know, priests are supposed to have heavy breakthrough. But I get people want to see it in writing. So this book is going to do that for late war. Now, unfortunately, your mid-war stuff is still going to be the same, which I think is still okay at this point. Yeah. You know, talk to your opponents. Talk to your tournament organizer. Say, look, these are 81mm mortars. In late war, they have direct fire. The rule book mentions them having direct fire. We know this is a version 2 book. Are we okay with giving these guys direct fire?
There you go.
And either your opponent says yes or no, and, you know, your game's not broken one way or the other.
Right. Either way you figure
We've
it out.
We've been playing everything the way it's going to be. You know, the way That's we right. know it's going to be, like, priests in mid-war have heavy breakthrough gun and all that good stuff. But, you know, if you're concerned, email your tournament organizer, talk to your opponent. Anyway, so this book is going to be cool. It's going to just have your official arsenal for everything. I believe Easy Army is updating all of his stuff to be version 3 compliant. I think you'll see even in books where they're not, he has them version 3 listed. He was really concerned about that. He and I talked for a little bit. He just wasn't sure what to do. And eventually we're like, look, they're going to be that way, right? It's just a matter of Battlefront updating the book. So he went for it. I think that makes sense, personally.
Shout out to our boy Greg. It was nice to meet him at Cold War.
It was. It was really cool to meet him.
Really nice guy.
And they're rocking and rolling, getting through some stuff. And he's going to have his hands tied for a little while because a lot of the PDFs have now been updated for version 3. A whole slew of them.
Yeah, we need to get, before Historicon, Greg, please a Bridge Too Far so that I can print list for my game for it, please.
I think he's working on a Bridge Too Far right now.
I mean, he's working on stuff. I mean, he cranks the stuff out. It's a dollar.
Oh, I mean, so, it's literally one of the best deals in gaming.
It is. So, all right, so.
All right, so moving on here. We are going to have our first version 3 noob zone.
Without Joe.
Wow.
We're going to talk about the differences between independent teams and warrior teams in version 3. There's a much more distinct difference now. So we can kind of go round robin here, talk about some of the things we've experienced.
I got the easiest rule.
What's that?
Where it says, warriors are not independent teams.
Right, exactly.
Specifically and clearly in that exact language.
It sure does. Right there on page 68. They are not independent teams. They share a lot of the same rules, but they are not independent teams. I think one of the biggest changes is independent teams can no longer counterattack or attack, meaning your observer, or in assaults, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
They can no longer assault or counter-assault. So independent teams have to bounce as soon as they can.
So no more mystery Super Sherman.
No more mystery observer. Super Sherman. No more, you know, throwing in two observers from your mortars to bolster your ranks. No more of that, which I like that a lot. It makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense.
And also, you know, just because you can't really do the daisy chain anymore because – I mean, I could assault you. You could say, well, this observer is attaching to these guys, but it's still only people within 8 inches.
That's
so you can't drag in guys. So really, really close down that loophole. Let's see. So warrior teams, on the other hand, can assault. Either they can join a platoon or they can assault all on their own.
All by themselves, yeah. Right. And they can also take objectives by themselves.
They can take objectives by themselves.
Which is very scary.
It is.
What is it? Is it huge?
It's very scary. Not Harry Carey.
It's humongous. Airy Carey. Right.
You guys are jackasses.
Sorry,
you knew this.
I know. We always give you L about it. So. All right. What are the differences we got here between warriors?
We interview
teams?
People from around the damn world, and we don't. You don't give any of these people problems, and they get accents and
familiarity breeds contempt.
That's exactly right. All right, so where were we?
I have no idea.
Another big one is independent teams can't shut down infiltrations.
That's right. Recce moves too, right?
Right, and warriors might not be able to either. I forget. Let me look that up real quick. We have the rules set
so
up here.
What they're talking about is back in the day, you guys are probably familiar with this in version 2, one of the things to stop Soviet infiltration and recon moves and spearheads was to put your observers down at the end. So you saw where the guy was definitely going to make his recon move or his push forward with the spearhead. And then you put a recon, I mean, an independent team, observer, whatever, way up front. And then you got stopped.
Right. And yes, warrior teams can't shut that down either. So independent warrior teams don't shut down recon or infiltration.
They shouldn't. I think like three guys standing over there. Sure. What? What's that? Who cares? It's probably some peasants,
well,
right?
Steve, just a little clarification. You mentioned this while we were outside in the break. Mm-hmm. You know, there's questions as what is an independent team? What is a warrior team? And and you said, I think best is that warrior teams are kind of a subclass
of
independent teams.
Yeah, which is a little bit dangerous thinking because it does clearly say warrior teams are not independent teams, but they share so many of the same rules that it's almost like a Venn diagram, right, where there's just a few differences in independents, a few differences in warriors, but really they kind of they attach to platoons in the same way, they deploy in the same way. So they are fairly similar. You know, they can go off, they can walk around on their own, they can kind of be their own platoon, or they can join up with others. Mm-hmm. So they do share a lot of the same commonalities.
Well, let me ask you a question with independent warrior teams, or we'll just say warrior teams.
Right.
Can I take, if I've got tanks that are going into ambush,
right,
can I put my commander and 2IC with them and then ambush with them?
No, you can't. You can only put warrior teams that are a permanent part of a platoon in ambush. So a great example would be Rat. You know, he takes over the platoon leader in the ISU 122 unit.
So you couldn't do it with like Frost either.
You couldn't do it with Frost. You couldn't do it with like Patton, you know, upcoming in Blood Guts
or Steve.
Or Steve, right? But you could do it, for example, with
Dirty John
with Beer
with Luke, because Luke
is the platoon leader. Right. So in some cases they can, in some cases they can't. They can't go into ambush on their own. However, I do believe they can choose to be deployed off table and show up from reserve with a platoon. Don't quote me on that, but I remember. Yeah. In fact, why don't you guys chat for a second? I'll look that up and double check.
Talk amongst yourselves. So, John, what do you think? How do you think the warrior teams now have a bigger impact?
I think they've clarified. I think the big thing is the 2SC being able to take your company. Morale checks if your CIC is dead. That's huge. And so is those guys being able to take objectives. I mean, before, you couldn't do that, and you just got a 2SC kind of dancing out there. Well, if you've got him in a fast vehicle or in a tank or something, and you run it, there's a good chance you can get him out there and threaten an objective.
Yeah, exactly. You can slip around. Just one tank. He's easy to hide.
Well,
that
could
be a lot of great things.
Back in the day, you could say, okay, well, let's say I got my 2IC. We'll just say a Sherman.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I could put him over on this far left flank. I'm making my big push on the right.
Yeah.
But I can still hold down the platoon because you can't leave.
Right.
Because if I sneak in there.
Yeah, I'll stay at 11 inches and keep machine gunning.
Or God forbid you run a light tank company and the guy's got his 2IC and a Stuart or something like that.
So I think that really changes tactics. Go
ahead, Steve. On page 259, unless otherwise stated.
Now, this
warrior,
is a mini rule book, right?
Yeah, this is a mini. Well, but the page numbers match up. That's a beautiful thing Battlefront did. The page numbers are the same. So page 259. Warriors and independent teams, unless otherwise stated, warrior teams that are not a permanent part of a platoon and independent teams deploy after all platoons have been deployed. So that's standard version 2, similar.
Yeah.
They can be deployed with a platoon or on their own anywhere in their deployment area. Okay, pretty straightforward.
Okay.
But if the mission has reserves, you may elect to hold them in reserve and bring them on with a platoon arriving from reserves later in the game. So that's a pretty cool option. Now, you know, for instance, a breakthrough, you may want your company commander to be part of that assault that comes on from the flank. You can attach him that way.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big change.
But on 267, it says ambush.
Right.
And it says warrior teams that are not a permanent part of a platoon and independent teams cannot be held in ambush.
Right. That's right. They can't be held in ambush. Now, here's a source of
The only time you could do that, there's confusion on this, and Steve and I talked about this. We actually played this wrong
we did.
At Cold Wars, but
cheaters.
There was a lot of people saying you could do it, and even we played John Desch, and he's like, why don't
he's
we
like, yeah, I think you can. Yeah.
So if you had a situation where the 2IC was leading some headquarter assets, then he could be held in ambush because he is the permanent part of
he's
a platoon
commander.
And he's now platoon commander.
Well, another thing
is
Frost's little reserve platoon that's made out of the 2SC. You can do that. Because actually I did that with Ted. Is I actually took that, made a little reinforcement platoon, and I actually,
Yeah. Right. Now, here's one little source of confusion for us, and we're just not really sure how to play it. I think we've kind of made a decision, but this is starting on page 68 and 69, where we're talking about transport teams. Now, it clearly states that if an independent team with a transport dies, it's gone. Now, the confusion here is on page 70. It says, if an independent team has a transport team, the transport team operates as part of the same platoon as its independent team. So pretty straightforward. If the independent team is destroyed, the transport team is also destroyed, but the destruction of the transport team has no effect on the independent team itself. A transport team belonging to an independent team cannot carry any passengers other than independent teams. If its independent team dismounts, all other passengers must also dismount, and the transport team must be sent to the rear. It can be brought forward again later if the independent team needs it again. Now, the confusion here is what happens to Warriors. If you have your 2IC and your 2IC dies, does his transport stick around? And the confusion really is just one page back, right? This clearly says all of those rules said independent. I never said the word warrior. And right there at the top paragraph of page 68, it says warrior teams are not independent teams. So what happens to a company commander's
half-track?
Well, let me clarify that. It says warrior teams are not independent teams. See page 70.
Right. Exactly.
So my guess is that's just an editing problem, and
that
page didn't get updated to say warrior teams and independent teams. Well, I'm guessing that's going to be a lot of...
I think this deserves at least 15 to 20 angry posts on the Flames of War forum, and, you know, just condemning version 3.
Now, let's clarify. This really only matters for Germans, because they get the mounted assault rules, which means their transports can stay around unloaded. If this were the Americans or anyone else, their half-tracks go to the rear anyways when you dismount, so it doesn't really matter.
So Ted and I ran into this, and so he came up, and I shot and killed his 2SC, and there's his transport.
Right. So what do you
do? So what we did is we said, well, the rules as written, since it talks about mounted assault and everything, and then it never has an exception that says, well, and for warrior teams, blah, blah, blah. So we just left it sit there.
Okay. So here's another thought.
It says under the HQ that they use the mounted assault rules.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I agree. They do use mounted assault.
Yeah.
But the question is, what platoon is that transport a part of now? It's on its own.
He can't
move.
Right. So what do you do with it?
So he just sits there.
Well, what we said was... Yeah, and I don't think I don't know if he tried to move it around or not.
Right, because he joins the same platoon that the independent or warrior team joins.
Yeah, so we just let him keep it.
So it's a little wonky.
But I'm guessing that page where you just said independent team, that's
they meant to say
warrior and independent team.
Yeah, so I think moving forward, I'll probably, if my company commander 2IC dies, their half-track should go away. But, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and again, there's one or two little confusing points in version 3, and I hate to sound like we're nitpicking, because really version 3 is awesome. It's just little questions like this that kind of need to be worked through.
Yeah, and I think that, for me anyway, every rule I've looked at, again, we've said it 100 times, the mounted assault is the only place I think that's become
It's really the only part we've been confused on, And it's such a minor aspect of it anyway. It's not like this comes up in every game.
Roll it out, work it out.
Yep,
who cares?
Exactly.
All right, so questions on assaulting, and you assault and you have some independent teams within that 8-inch bubble initially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know the answer for this.
Yeah, no,
but
please,
I just want to, just so guys out there who may not know it.
Right.
So it says you're forced to disengage, but just keep in mind, guys, it doesn't mean that those guys don't participate in the first round of that assault.
Right. So they get defensive fire.
They get defensive fire.
They
could take hits or whatever. So it may not be a bad idea to have your observer there to observe that, to take that first hit on the platoon. And you say, okay, well, these guys are involved in the assault. I'm going to go ahead and I'm not going to need this observer. I'll take it on them. I don't want to take any more damage on this.
Yeah.
And I plan on pulling back, as John clearly demonstrated in his assault videos.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's good to pull back. And then especially now with those crazy German machine guns to just machine gun the heck out of people, right?
Yep. And yeah, again, you know, just to clarify what Luke said, independent teams have to break off immediately. They have they can't roll motivation or anything to try to counterattack. They just have to get out of Dodge.
Right.
Yeah. Now, another big one is warrior teams attaching later in an assault.
Yeah.
If they are, say, out of range and they don't assault or they don't attach to a platoon right away, they're considered non-assaulting teams.
Right. That's right.
So you have to kind of commit them pretty early, or else they're going to
My only big question with the independent teams came up, and I haven't addressed this with you, is let's say, if you can picture this, you've got, you know, your platoon, and it's all lined up here, and one of these guys is an independent team, and you've got assaulting platoons coming this way.
Right.
Directly at him.
Right.
Well, your independent team breaks off, and he's an infantry stand, so he moves back 6 inches.
Right.
Okay? Now, this assault progresses several rounds, mm-hmm. and by the time it ending, my defending unit that had the independent team in it is now back here.
Right.
You know? And your attacking unit has moved up to here.
Right.
And he's within 4 inches of that team that originally broke off.
Yeah.
Is that team captured?
Or does he get another? Because remember, there's almost like two pushback in the assault now. There's that initial, I failed motivation, so I have to fall back.
Right.
And then I can consolidate. And when you consolidate, you can get within 2 inches of the opponent. You can consolidate your full 4 inches. So in your case, I could consolidate to be within base to base with that independent team. He's, and then after that, back. I get to move back again.
Well, what I'm saying is, you
get bubbled out.
Yeah,
right.
It's basically, okay. You get a 2 inch bubble.
And it can, if you're a tank, for example, and you pull back, and I roll bogging, and then you consolidate to touch me, and so I have to fall back again. If I bog at that point, I'm dead. So it's like you really get pushed back twice.
Right. So if I break off and bog, then you consolidate and get next to me.
Right.
Now
I have to bog again to try to get away again.
Yeah.
So it's basically you don't have that bubble in the consolidation move. And if you end within 2 inches, you have to push again.
Back.
You can be 2.5 inches, 2.1 inches, though. It's now just the 2 inches.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. Let's see. Where was it? Warrior teams must join before the assault. That's the rule I wanted to read.
That's right.
In order to join the assaulting platoon as an assaulting team, a warrior team must join it before it charges into contact. Any warrior team that joins an assaulting platoon after it's charged into contact is a non-assaulting team.
But still part of the platoon.
Right. You can still give the motivation reroll. Like, say, if you attach later with the company commander.
Right.
Right. But you're a non-assaulting team. Right. You can't come charging in the counterattacks and stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, I think that about covers it. I mean, there's a few more little subtle differences, but...
Yeah, it's not many. I mean, there's a few more things that warriors can do now. There's a little less that the independent teams can do now. So just, make sure you read through it and check
it out. Well, that's a big thing that you just said, though, that you have to choose before.
Yeah.
Because, because you have to look at it and say, okay, I really want my fearless guys in here, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be able to make motivation, but I got some confident trained guys here. And I don't know if they're going to make their motivation. And
don't forget, that's only if you want to be an assaulting team.
Right.
That's only.
Right. Yeah, because you can join and still give the motivation.
Can't I did that with Frost. I was outside the 8-inch bubble.
Right.
And so I joined him later and allowed them to take 2-up motivation checks.
And there's other kind of similar situations where in order for a warrior or independent team to benefit from something, you have to have joined before the die roll. So like digging in, I can't roll, dig in. Okay, now I'm attaching my company man, so he's dug into. Right. Same with Stormtrooper.
That's right.
You now have to attach him before the die is rolled.
That's right.
Oh, which
makes sense.
That.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's new. You know, you can't do the old roll Stormtrooper, pass, attach the guy.
Right.
You know, it's now explicit. You have to be clear.
Yeah,
from the
so when you say I'm attaching this commander
and
to
now
this unit because I want to or I want to re-roll motivation checks for them, but I've got 2 pinned down platoons.
Right.
You got to make the decision which one you really want.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you can still give the re-roll after the first roll is made for motivation. If I have 2 pinned down platoons, I can roll for platoon A, and if failed, then attach the company
and
commander. In order for him to benefit from a die rolled, he has to
understood.
Be a part
understood.
Of it. So it doesn't morale doesn't really change. It's more like digging in and stormtrooper.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, that kind of stuff.
All right.
Cool. First noob zone for version 3.
Without Joe.
That's right.
Without Joe.
In the can.
Wow. All right.
All right, so we have just a couple of little more tidbits here. One is a painting tip for painting flesh. And there's a million different ways I've seen people do this. And I've recently started doing kind of a new way that Joe showed me, actually, which I kind of like. And I'll just go through that really quickly. He starts with sort of a reddish brown coat that he just slathers on the area of flesh, and then he inks that very carefully, and then paints the flesh or the sort of pinky flesh color over top of that, and it gives a really good deep like color on.
Now
on
is he dry brushing it on, or is he?
No, what he does.
The T.
Yeah, he basically does the T and the U. Yep, and then so in the recesses, it's that kind of reddish brown, and it looks really good. So how do you guys do flesh when you're painting it?
Well, yeah. What I do is I just paint it the dwarf flesh, and then just or whatever color I happen to have, and then I hit it with a brown wash.
Yeah, and that usually comes out just fine.
Yeah, I mean it's okay. I mean it's not as detailed as some of the other stuff, but it comes out okay. I do that before any gloss though. I found if I gloss them, the ink doesn't go. The shade doesn't kind of slide anywhere. It slides all over the place.
The only thing that I've found, and I think, John, you agree with me, we talked about this, is you paint the flesh first.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do is I don't use as much paint on the face because
yeah,
I don't like lines on my face.
Yeah.
You know, and I dig. I mean, people do it. It's fine. And I don't paint eyeballs or anything like that.
No.
But if I use just a little bit on there, and I, like I said, I paint it first because if I have to go back, and we'll take Americans specifically because I painted more infantry being Americans, and well, that's all I've really painted.
Yeah. So you paint with your credit card. That's how you paint.
That's right. Yeah. But when I have, well, I've got some stuff I'm actually going to do. But anyway, we'll get into that another time. But yeah, that's the thing that I do is I paint it on first because I don't have a steady hand like you guys do. Right. And I have a tendency of going over. So if I go over a little bit on the helmet, it's okay because when I go back to paint the helmet,
you're good. Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about that before. It covers up paint inside out.
Inside out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that's it for me.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing I do too is, and I know a lot of people do this, is basically how I start every infantry figure is black, and then I dry brush it whatever the major uniform color is. Mm-hmm. So like gray or brown for the English or whatever, and that really helps the face come out as well. It actually puts some time.
There's a lot of different techniques to use, especially if you're painting 25 mils.
Yeah. And when 25 is different story.
Or fantasy figures or things like that where a lot more skin's exposed. For our situations, you know, we're painting 15 mil and we're only getting hands and face.
Yep.
Yeah, hands and face.
Good enough.
Yep.
Hands to face. Face palm.
Get you in the knee. So.
All right, cool. Okay, so moving on here, modeling tips. Let's talk about hills. And Luke, I'm kind of looking to you. I've done it before too, but you're kind of the hill master. So,
well, so let's talk about the basic way of doing hills.
Yeah.
All right, and go to Home Depot or Lowe's, whatever you prefer. You can buy the styrofoam. What I suggest is the pink or blue foam boards, and you get them. You can do them in 1-inch sections, or you can do them in 2-inch sections.
Right.
Now. What I have found, number one, the 2-inch sections are harder to work with.
Yes.
Because they're thicker. And also, as we were talking about today, you just don't use them as much for 15 millimeters.
Plus, you can layer the 1-inch ones.
Yeah. Right. And that's the next thing. I mean, you can layer the 1-inch ones to do whatever you want. If you want to have some rocky parts and stuff like that, you can do those. And Steve, maybe you want to take a picture of a couple of these hills.
Sure.
And even the one that I made for you.
Yeah.
The green one.
Yep.
But the basic way of doing it is you get the tools that you need. I prefer. I know a lot of people use like a drywall cutting knife, and then they'll just cut around. I prefer. I know this sounds crazy, but I'll take a Sharpie and I trace basically the hill I want, and I'll take like a 4x4 section and like when we did them in mass amounts, made all those hills, trace them all, and then I actually take a jigsaw. And I'll try to angle a little bit. And if you have a jigsaw, I have a pretty nice jigsaw. I can put it in an angle. So when I cut around, I've already got that little bit of angle there.
Yeah,
and it's all about saving time and making it easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then go along with your hot knife.
Yep.
And you can buy those at like Ben Franklin or everything like that. They're about 10, 20 bucks. The ones that take double D batteries are actually...
Yeah,
are actually good.
Yeah, I have one of those. It was cheap. It was like $10.
Yeah,
it's literally just cheap. Like a battery pack
some
and a wire.
Really nice ones you can buy.
Right.
But we're just talking about basic stuff. I keep promising myself that I'm going to buy one of those nice styrofoam cutters.
Yeah.
But just the basic, you know, you cut the shape of the hill that you want, and then angle it off, and then the basic way people do them. And you know, I'm just not a fan of it anymore, though. I mean, it's pretty standard on most tabletops. Mm-hmm. And then you get some latex paint and you paint them green, and then you either flock them immediately and then put some kind of matte medium or white glue. John, you're really good at that with the...
Yeah, the matte medium, usually you want to try and stay away from most of the aerosol.
Yeah, it'll eat it up if you're not careful.
If you're not careful, it'll eat it up. Generally, what we like to do is, when we've done hills in the past, is we'll hit them with some just base green latex paint from Home Depot, roll it on, and then also flock it at the same time, let that dry, and that's okay, but you really have to go back, and once that latex has sealed it, what I like to do is hit it with the matte medium
right,
and let that dry up. Then after the matte medium's done, then you can go ahead and hit it with the, as long as you're not spraying the under pink side, you can go ahead and hit it with the aerosol like testers
matte
or whatever.
Now, there's some different ways of doing this. What I've done recently, and I really like this, it is a little bit more time consuming. It doesn't take too much more time if you're okay with getting a little dirty. and
I like getting dirty.
Yeah, well, that's your damn name, right? Dirty John. So the thing is that, and I'm sure there are plenty of YouTube videos out there on doing things like this. Ha ha, you gotcha, you bastards. So what I do is once I cut it, because one of the, is I actually take spackling, and you can buy it for like $5 for half a gallon or whatever, and I grab a handful of it. And I mean, I just
rub it all over your body. And, oh, I mean, your hill.
Well, that's John. That's a different YouTube channel.
No pictures on Facebook of that.
So what I do is I take that and I honestly, I just spread it all around and I actually get the underside of it. Because one of the problems with the first wave we were talking about hills is that the bottoms crack off and then you see pink.
Yeah.
Somebody pokes it or drops something on it, even the corner of a figure. Right. And you've got, you can see pink in your green hill, you know. In a, a jerk, and
then your host up because what you want to do is get that spackle on there because that hardens it up, and you want to get the matte medium over it, which really makes it
right. And then what I do is I actually take a little bit and put it on the underside too, around about makes sense. You can see on this around about a you know I don't know an inch.
That's a good idea. It seals that edge.
And it seals the edge. It makes it hard. And I mean this is.
Yeah.
And there's no breakage whatsoever.
So, yeah, for my desert hills, if you take a look at some of those after action reports, you can see the ones that kind of have rocky pieces. I actually kind of cut those to shape out of the foam, and then I coated the whole thing in sand so it looks like nice and rough. And then around the edges, I built it up with spackle. So you can see kind of the cliff sides are spackling and then, you know, moving into the rock areas.
Well, to make it go a little bit faster, to smooth it out, if you want your top to be smooth, just add a little bit of extra water to it and use a big putty knife and bring it on that. And it'll make it, it smooths it out. But when you do, after you finish that, just take a quick sand over it on the bottom to make sure it's smooth. Maybe go over the top to make sure there's nothing, you know, poking out that's going to break out later. Going to break off later.
You see the white spot or whatever.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then at that point, what I do is I actually spray paint it black. Because there's nothing exposed. Because
you've sealed it.
And it's already sealed. And then you can spray paint it black, and that makes it easy because you don't have to worry about taking a brush and, I got to go over this section because there's a groove.
I really do like the painting on that. It looks great.
Well, once I paint it black, I take a... If you're going to do green hills...
You have a red door and you want it painted black.
Right. All you do is take a paintbrush and just slop on some paint and throw some flock on it, just like we talked about the first time around, and then repeat the process. I prefer matte medium now. John's has made me converted me on matte medium. And once that's done, you're good. I mean, that stuff hardens like a rock, and you can push on the top of it, and you're not going to, I mean, there's no, you know, I'm pushing on this hill right here.
Yeah. Now, my advice for like sloping the sides is, guys, if you slope the sides too much, then you're going to end up with really thin pieces on the edge and you're going to try and break. So, you know, although that ideally, if you're doing a model railroad board, would look the best, trying to slope them too much is going to mess you up. You're better off doing a sharper angle where you can clearly tell whether you're up or down.
Oh, and there's one other thing, too, I can say on that to help with that, John, is before I put any plaster on, it's I get one of those sanding bricks and just go around the edges of it. Yeah. And that, before you put any spackle on, and that will help take some of those pieces and not make them, you know, but even since, you know, you got to have some give to it because if it's too sharp.
It's like a balancing act because if it's too sharp, you can't put troops on it if it's a high hill. And if it's too shallow, like John says, the edges are brittle.
But one of the things, again, the doing the underside with plaster makes a huge difference for the strength. And then the matte medium, I think, helps out a lot, too. So, and here's the worst case scenario. Down the road, a piece does happen to chip off because one of your friends got mad at you because you were hiding behind a hill and using Stormtrooper to shoot up all the Soviet infantry, Soviet tanks. You just break it off. And, you don't break it off. You just take some more paint over it, and go from there. So, That's hills.
Very cool.
You know, doing if you want to do rocky outcroppings, and Steve will take some pictures of them.
Yeah.
You paint them black. I mist it, and when I call it misting, I just lightly go over it with some gray spray paint. Yeah. And
it looks good. The painting on it's great. I'll tell you what, I would love to highlight with white.
That's it.
I know. And it's easy to do, and it looks great. If I ever have more space, because I couldn't possibly sort, I really do want to do like a really rocky Italy board. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think it'd be fun to really, you know, get in and make it really contoured, you know, as opposed to flat with some hills sticking up.
Well, one of the things I like is, like you were talking about with your desert, and I know we're really talking about hills now, but
that's fine.
I did green and then like a little brown to show dirt.
Yeah.
And then some rocky pieces there too. And I was really happy with that. And then you can just determine with your opponent, okay, this is just a hill, but it just looks cool.
Yep.
Or this side right here is impassable.
Yeah.
You know, anything that's gray is
anything gray is impassable. Very difficult or whatever.
Yeah. So, and I want to use the same technique in doing rubble. That's what I'm looking forward to doing rubble, except maybe throwing some brown in there here and there.
Yeah, you know, some reddish brick color.
Right, exactly.
I need a bunch of rubble for Steve O'Grad, as you guys know.
I'll make a mold for you, man.
Lauterbach gave me a bunch of like just random cut off pieces, so I'm going to make a mold and get it to you. And I really want to do the mold of the chimneys and the burnt down peasant house. And he actually gave me a bunch of chimneys, so I don't even need that. I just kind of need the house itself. I'm thinking maybe even just a Battlefront large base and kind of make it look like it's been burned down and then have a spot where I can stick the chimney and just make a bunch of those.
This is Mr. Link over here too with all the plaster stuff.
That's
so
true.
Yeah. So, well, that's my thing on hills.
Cool. So. Very cool. All right. So moving along, since we kind of talking terrain already, I kind of want to talk about how we're playing terrain in version 3. Now, for the most part, it's pretty explicit, and we do follow 95% of the rules as they're listed in version 3. But there are a few things where we diverge. And I think the big one is, which I think is the perfect change that needed to happen, is, of course, the new way of I-95 rubble, which is visibility is true line of sight. So they're no longer woods that are very difficult and bulletproof. Right. They're still bulletproof and they're still very difficult, but if you can see a team, you can see a team.
Yeah, and I don't think we diverge with Battlefront there, do we? Because they say area terrain has to be taller than boats.
They do say it's taller than boats. So yeah, you're right. That's not really a huge divergence, but I guess we've gotten rid of the simplification that was. Yeah, no, you just can't see through it.
Yeah,
and now.
Yeah, so now we play it to where if we've got a piece of rubble in between two tanks, the two tanks can shoot each other.
Right.
Or if there's they might have cover.
They might have cover. And you can decide that. And then, or if there's an infantry team inside rubble and I'm a tank, I can shoot it.
Right. And we've even said they always have concealment, whether or not they're actually concealed.
Sure.
But as far as whether you can see them or not, I think that's a big change. I think that's the needed change.
It's huge.
It's huge. Because it makes it possible to assault rubble because you can get your support units. Because I think that was my issue with it.
Right.
It's not that it wasn't necessarily not realistic or anything. The issue was it was so hard to ever assault a position because you couldn't get smoke in there. You couldn't get mortars in there because everything had to be within 6 inches. So pinning them was impossible. You know, getting
Grenadiers dug in that crap. Yeah. You can't see them at all.
Right. I think that's a big one. The other one I really wanted to talk about was how we're treating the linear woods, right? I've read that section.
You mean tree lines?
Yeah, tree lines.
Okay. Yeah. We have basically done almost everything as being woods, not linear obstacles. Although I don't think the linear obstacles rules are too bad. All you got to do is get out of your mind what it's modeled as and say it's a really thick wall.
Right. I think the trick is the woods we and I-95 have modeled are a little too thick.
Yeah, they're easily Panther width or more.
Right.
Or Tiger width or more. And that's
I think they really need to be half an inch inch tops like, to be the linear.
Yeah. Now some of mine are a little thin, I would say mine are Jeep width or something.
Yeah, so, yours are right on the line.
Yeah, but again, like we say all the time, just have the talk and do it. I do think it's nice that they have the rules in there for the tree lines because I can definitely see in the future where I'll have some stuff that are true tree
lines. That would especially make sense in like a city where it's been
lining a road.
Yeah,
or something
and
like
it's
that.
Been like taken care of and pruned.
Absolutely.
And stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, but. You know, I'm real pleased with the different categories of how it's made it
easy. And I'll tell you what, slow going has been. There's a lot of slow going. It's all new.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to use my bulldozer the other day. I forgot about that. You know, they made the rules for bulldozers better.
Yeah.
So in the game me and Sean played, you remember I played on the same board that you and I played. Yeah. So if you guys have already seen me and John's battle report, did we post that yet?
Yes.
I think we did. So if you saw that, I'm starting in that same quarter, and there's a big woods there that, you know, it was hard to get through. But I started with my 2IC adjacent to the woods, like a little outcropping of the woods. It was 4 inches, right about 4 inches.
Right.
At the very start of the game, the very first thing he did was roll that die, and he rolls it just like a Pioneer team gapping obstacles.
Yeah.
So he rolled it, succeeded, and that clears a 4x2-inch path through that wood, and it becomes slow going rather than difficult. So then all my tanks could pour through that gap in the wood. I thought that was pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
That was pretty neat.
That's cool, man. Yeah, what I'm doing for Arnhem is, you guys know, I'm not going to be putting down the felt pieces, so it's not going to be super, super you know, right aligned, you know, with whether you're in or out of the woods. I think what I'm going to do is make some counters that say straddle, you know, totally in, whatever, and just let you declare, you know, these guys are totally in or whatever.
Well, one of the things new with the rules, and I don't know if everybody's aware of this before, you could just straddle the line, like you said, with the woods, but you have to have over 50% of your model, or at least 50%.
For cover.
For cover.
Yeah, 50% or more.
And that screwed me, because I wasn't aware of that in the last tournament. I was like, oh, I'm in the corner.
Before straddling isn't, that doesn't imply any percentage. That just means part of you is in it. Mm-hmm. Right. So in version 2, it was a little easier to get a bunch of guys.
And then a smoke on your rear fender doesn't prevent you from shooting anymore.
Right, exactly.
Or being, or getting concealed.
Has to be all the way through. I use a lot of direct fire smoke, by the way, with my Shermans. That was
pretty fun. Make some of those, man. We've got to make some direct fire smoke. Yeah.
Are they supposed to be round, or are they supposed to be square?
4x2, they show them in the book.
Yeah. I think they're round in the book, but they really do make a 4x2 area, so I think you can make them squared off. Mm-hmm. Maybe with rounded edges or something, but I don't know.
Well,
but, yeah, I mean, they're awesome. I mean,
it's much bigger now.
It's much bigger, so it shuts down a lot more. Things. And it's plus two, because you're gone to ground through it. You know,
I think the way to do it is to just do a 4x2 piece of wood with some wire through, and then make the...
Yeah, make those
either
cool
make
ones.
The smoke things, or take the, or just take batting and...
Yeah.
You know, glue the bottom of it.
I need to buy some, because I use the white felt squares.
Yeah, you can get the ones like we got at Hobby Lobby.
Is that where you got them?
Yeah. No,
you have those
where
nice,
them,
like, thicker ones, right?
Yeah, you can get that there or any upholstery shop.
And what's that called, just for
batting.
People looking for it? Batting?
Okay. Yeah, it's the stuff we use for smoke. If you guys have seen the battle reports, when the Lucar are playing, the real thick pieces, just batting. In fact, I think I got them from Waterback like a year ago or something.
I bought them from Waterback and you stole them. But that's okay. Not to bring up.
So you got them indirectly from Waterback.
My finance officer.
Yeah.
Struck the check.
Chief financial officer.
I took the product, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to grab some of those. Any other terrain clarifications we've come across since we've been playing version 3 now a little bit?
I don't think much of a clarification, but things that people need to take into account is, you know, you better be within 2 inches of woods. Mm. Or a building for airplanes.
Or Bokash.
Or they're getting you. Or Bokash. Right. No, not tree lines.
Because they're linear obstacles.
That's right. So
they're not a wood.
Exactly.
Not rubble, because they're not buildings. They're rubble.
Right.
Not hills. Not cliffs.
That's right.
Buildings, woods.
Yeah. So take that into account. And I think that's had an impact on games, definitely.
Yeah.
Movement alone. I mean, seeing people... You know, just
hugging those
tree
lines.
The trees.
Yeah,
I got to move, get close enough to be within those trees.
Oh, yeah.
I can't take those Stukas.
Or typhoons.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, well, I think it's about time we wrap this episode up and move into After Hours. Just a few more little cool things. We've got some new stuff coming up on the website. One of the big ones is we've got Eric Reha wrote us some Flames of War Statistics 101.
They are awesome.
They are really
good. They
are good.
Awesome.
It's basic statistical math. What'd you say?
Send them to me. I haven't seen them.
They'll be up there. Dude, they're on the Blogger. We have a queue of posts, so it's not that I send them out. He just looked at them there.
I can't access Blogger, can I?
I think you're on there.
You're on there. You just don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Technology, you're a Luddite.
Anyway, so he wrote these posts that are...
Hopefully I'll have you guys up to speed by 2000.
Luke is Amish. He doesn't believe in buttons either.
Yeah. Who was it? Luke was telling someone a cold. He's like, I'm trying to teach these guys how to use...
Well, here's the thing. I didn't actually... We a buddy of mine, we were talking about doing some interview, and he was asking about our site and things like that.
Yeah.
And I replied, but I didn't recopy him on it. I just sent it to John and Steve.
Yeah.
And I said, I know. We've been working on it, and I'm trying to get Steve and John up to speed on how to do this. Hopefully by 2013...
They'll know how to use a computer.
For all you out there, Luke does nothing on the website at all.
Right. Like, I'll give him something like, take pictures of this and make a post on something. Right.
Anyway, so these articles are introduction. They're basically basic statistical stuff, but how they directly tie to Flames. We're like calculating odds of a die roll, how you multiply the numerators and denominators and stuff. So it's basic math so that you can kind of learn how to come up with the odds correctly.
And Tom has hinted at some of this stuff and talked a little bit about it in some of the previous posts.
Right.
This will really tie it all together and show you the real math.
And that's what kicked it off is Eric saw one of Tom's posts about kind of some math numbers. And he was like, I think this could be useful to a lot of people. And so I think they're great. He's got another one coming. He's got two articles now. They're going to go live in just a couple of days. And then he's got a third one on the way. So huge thanks to Eric Ria, by the way, one of the best players out there.
And we talked to Mr. Wilcox, and he's going to be writing something for us down the road here.
Billy Wilcox has something cooking. I've got more Army Collection videos coming. I've got four more to do now. And now this is one of my favorite things.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. We appreciate it, bud.
Mike Bursix has been converting some ASL scenarios into Flames of War historical scenarios, and they look great. He sent me four of them so far that are Eastern Front, Soviets, and, and Germans mostly.
Advanced squad leader.
Yep.
Advanced squad leader, yeah.
And he's converted them into really cool Flames of War downloads. So we're going to be adding a new section to the site under downloads. It's going to be four historical scenarios. He says he has 100 that he can convert. Awesome. And it'll take his time, and we'll update them kind of one at a time.
That'd be great.
They actually look like a lot of fun. A lot of them look kind of smaller engagements, maybe like 600 or 700 points, yeah, but kind of with some specifics.
Good, you can actually be done.
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing about them is it's oftentimes you're outnumbered, but they're kind of already balanced as they're based on something else. So I think they look like a whole lot of fun. I'm going to have to try them out. So thanks to Mike. Those will be coming up soon.
Yep.
What else, guys? Any other news? What else we got going on?
Going on? Arnhem, man. Yeah. That's what I got going on. It's Arnhem. Yeah, no, jeez. Now watch. I'll put it all together. We'll go to Historicon and it'll suck.
No one will show up.
Nobody will show up. They'll be like, screw you and your Arnhem board.
John's going to be teaching a painting seminar at
Historicon. Oh, yeah. We got to work that out.
That's right. We're gonna.
I'm working with our boy, Greg Zuniga.
Yep.
And so we got to do that. And that, I'm guessing that we're going to do that German tanks camouflage.
Yeah, well, we're gonna talk about some different things. We'll get it worked out.
Yeah, and so anyway, so what'll happen? News from the front, fans, is at Historicon on someday at some time. You like how specific I am there?
Yeah, Friday. Someday. It's gonna be Friday.
It's probably gonna be in the late afternoon,
early evening.
Yeah, and what'll happen is you guys can register for this and show up. We'll give you a tank, and then I'll help you paint it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we'll do.
That'll be cool. I'm not going to be doing anything because I'm going to be playing in Nationals, the Bataan Death March.
I qualified and said no.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to torture myself. Yeah. I have no idea what I'm going to run. I haven't even thought
what
about
even
it.
It's mid, right?
It's mid, so I was thinking...
Just mid? Any mid?
Yep, any mid. Oh, I was thinking Gepanzer to Panzer Grins. I was thinking a Stuart list. I mean, Stuart's in mid-war, not too bad.
Lukey.
Bring tank destroyers.
Yeah, exactly. I made a list that's like 17 Stuarts, M10s, and some recon and smoke, I think.
I want to see you play with the Panzer to Panzer Grins.
The good thing about Stuarts in mid-war is that you don't have all the AT assets that are going to be able to to knock them out of the park.
That's also the good thing about Panzer to Panzer Grins. They're huge, too.
Yeah.
They're huge.
Yeah. Right. I also thought about a German, like, medium tank list, but using all the basic Panzer III's, because they're basically a Super Stuart.
Converted.
You know?
Converted to a Panzer III.
To Panzer III?
I've always loved a Panzer, but these are the Panzer III shorts, so they're rate of fire 3 AT-7, but they're cheap, but they're veteran, I don't know.
But they're super cheap.
They are.
I'm sure we'll be trying that out to help him out with that list. I think
Panzer Grands, dude.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything off the table. I'm going to try it all out. But you did see I ordered like 12 of the SDKFZ 251/1C half tracks for mid-war.
Yeah, that's going to be after these Panther Stugs and Tigers.
Yeah.
I will be looking at half tracks for the Germans then.
Yep. Yeah. All right, on that note, I think it's time to bring this episode to a close. Yeah, exactly. So until next time, keep calm and carry on.
Or else.
Thanks for listening to News from the Front, the podcast by gamers for gamers. Please remember that our opinions are ours and do not necessarily represent the views of the companies mentioned within. You can find us literally everywhere on the internet at wwpd.net, YouTube, and Twitter with the username wwpdpodcast, Facebook, MySpace, YourSpace, Friendster, Makeout Club, and of course, the Bacon Enthusiast online community. You can find Luke elsewhere on the web, but he's asked me not to share those links with you. Do remember to visit our website at wwpd.net for a plethora of after-action reports, painting tutorials, and product reviews. Click on Join This Site on the right-hand side to get an RSS feed of new posts so you can stay up to date and impress your friends. We also have a thriving forum so you can come interact with fellow WWPDers with minimal moderation. Feel free to email us at ourfirstname@wwpd.net. That's Stephen with a V, John without an H, and Luke without scruples. Again, thank you for listening.